Okay. Morning, everyone. How's everyone doing? It's okay. Bit of that summer feeling. In case you don't know who I am, my name's Dave Vann, and along with my wife, Laura, we've been here coming to Maidenhead for about 5 years-ish, and we've also recently returned from living in Cambodia for a couple of years. And I thought I'd kick off with a bit of a story from Cambodia. I won't try and keep up with Chris Forster and his disgusting stories, although we do have a few of those. You can come and ask us later about some of the things we ate out there. Thanks, Tina. Who's lived anywhere else apart from the UK for any substantial amount of time? Quite a few of you. Or who of you has come to the UK from another country? It's the same people. Well, any of you who will have lived in another country will know that sometimes getting to understand what's going on in the culture can be a little bit difficult. Often you can be a bit confused about why are people behaving in the way they are? Why are people saying the things that they're saying? And this was one of the experiences we had in Cambodia. After being there only a short time, I discovered that in Cambodia, particularly amongst the males, culturally appropriate to be quite physical, to be quite touchy with each other. And this is not something that we are used to in England. No. We don't touch. Sideways, maybe. I get people, you know, like my friends coming up to me and kind of, you know, giving my belly a bit of a rub. Yeah, okay. And sometimes, just because I wanted to know how fat I was, I'd give it a bit of a rub and a bit of a squeeze, you know, just to check how much fat there is. And I'm like, hi, thanks. This used to happen quite frequently. On one occasion, my landlord got a little bit carried away. He came around to our house. I was topless because it's very warm and I was sweating. And, you know, he saw the belly and he just couldn't resist. And he went for the belly rub and I was like, yeah, he's going to rub my belly. And then he kind of did a little bit of a strange thing. He got his finger and he went into my belly button. It really made me feel quite sick. And it was one of those times where, like, no, not culturally appropriate for my culture. Thank you. I dismissed that straight away. It's also something that you discover when you're riding around on motorbikes, which most people do in Cambodia. Guys will get very cozy on the back of the motorbike with you. And at first you think that this is odd, and then you realize actually that this is just their sign of friendship and affection. So, you know, if a guy doesn't know you, he'll sit very close to you on the back of a motorbike. If he's your mate, but you're not very close, he'll probably put his hands on your hips. If he's a very close friend, he'll show this closeness of relationship by putting his hands on your thighs. So you're sitting there driving a motorbike with some guy behind you having his hands on your thighs. It's a little distracting. It makes you wonder, what is going on? Why are they doing this? So one of the things we learned was actually the way people behave in Cambodia, in that sense, is very much about trying to find acceptance from you. It's really a sign of friendship and also a sign of they're testing out whether you think that they're on the same level as you, basically, whether you accept them as a peer, as a friend, or whether there's going to be some distance from you, some sort of authority or something. So in a sort of roundabout way, today I want to talk about motives. I want to talk about what our motives are that drive our actions. Because I feel a lot of time we focus very much on actions. You know, in our Christian life, we say, well, it's important about what you're saying and what you're doing. Your actions are really important. Thanks. And we often judge people on their actions. But I want to look at motives a bit today. In Proverbs 16:2, it says, all a man's ways seem innocent to him, but motives are weighed by the Lord. All the one man's ways seem innocent to him, but it's the motives that God is interested in. Jesus said something similar when he said to his disciples, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the pure motives, the pure motivated. I don't know what the grammar is there. Those with pure motives, they are the ones who will see God. I think motives are really crucially important, the motives that we have for how we behave and what we do. And we'll look at that a little bit in the light of a parable. So you can all turn your Bibles to Matthew 25, verse 14 to verse 30. Matthew 25, verse 14 to 30. Parable of the talents. It's a pretty well-known parable. Most of you probably have heard it before. Okay, let's see what it says. Again, it will be like a man, and this is when the kingdom comes, by the way. Again, it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, and to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received the 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one with the 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them. The man who had received the 5 talents brought the other 5. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 5 talents. See, I've gained 5 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things, and I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. The man with the 2 talents also came. Master, he said, you entrusted me with 2 talents. See, I've gained 2 more. His master replied, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Come and share your master's happiness. Then the man who had received the 1 talent came. Master, he said, I know you are a hard man, harvesting where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. So I was afraid and went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you. His master replied, you wicked, lazy servant. So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown and gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers, so that when I returned I would have received it back with interest. Take the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For everyone who has been given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. And throw that worthless servant outside into the darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Always get a little bit wondered what it's going to be like with all that gnashing of teeth. But anyway, that's another point. You probably heard this parable being taught on quite a few times. And I've heard different versions, I guess, or different explanations of what this parable is about, or maybe different angles on it. I've heard it preached, oh, this is about, parable's about success in winning souls. It's about success in seeing, winning souls and seeing people come into the kingdom. I've heard this parable being taught about, oh, this is about being successful in the gifts and the talents that you have, and how you use them. I've also heard that this parable being explained slightly bizarrely as being about financial success, which is a little bit odd in that Jesus always uses his parables allegorically. So, you know, a seed is never a seed, and a master is never really a master, and so on. It's not literal. So it's a little bit strange to apply this to literal financial success. But I actually think this parable isn't so much about success as it is about faithfulness. Each of the servant was given a talent of money according to his own ability. There wasn't an equal distribution of money. There was an expectation from the master that actually each had his own ability, his own level of trust that could be invested in him. And when the master returns, he doesn't say, well done, successful servant. You've multiplied my investment. He says, well done, faithful servant. Well done, faithful servant. You've been entrusted with a little, and now I can trust you with much. I think we sometimes get into our minds this idea that I need to be a successful Christian. What can I do to be a successful Christian? But I don't actually think that we are called to be successful. I think God calls us to be faithful. And you could argue, what's the difference in that? And the difference, I believe, is in motives. I believe our motive, our motivation should be not being successful, but actually our motivation should be being faithful to what God has given us and faithful to God's commands. I want to explore that a little bit today and see what that looks like. Now, I'm not saying that success is a bad thing. I'm not about to come down on anyone who's being successful in their life. I'm not saying it's bad or it's not from God. Nor is this an excuse for laziness or naffness. You know, you've heard it said sometimes, going, well, I'm not successful because I'm being faithful to the Lord. And actually, well, no, you're just doing something really naff. It's just poor quality. That's not what I'm saying either. It is about our motives, because where your treasure is, your heart will be also. I actually believe that if you're motivated by being successful and becoming successful, you go down one road. And if you're motivated by being faithful and obedient to God, you go down another road. I don't think you end up in the same place, depending on what your motivation is. Just in the same way that God says, you can't serve two masters, I don't believe you can serve a master. I don't think you can have an engine of success and an engine of faithfulness. I think they are two different roads. And this can be true. I'm not really targeting this specifically. This can be true in your studies, in your workplace, in your family, relationship. And interestingly enough, it can be especially true in Christian ministry as well. I think those motives, that motivation of wanting to be successful and wanting to be seen as being successful, can creep in any area. I don't think it's just about a work thing or earning money. It's actually all of our lives that can be affected by that. I think Jesus faced this temptation. Jesus faced the temptation to spectacularize his results and the impact he was having. Do you remember when he was taken into the desert and tempted by the devil? The devil was tempting him to have the big, visible impact. Boom! Grab the success now. Make it real. Make it big. Flashing lights. And Jesus was like, no, that is not the Father's way. That's not God's way. I personally found this really hard while we were in Cambodia. I think there can be a real pressure on people in Christian ministry, whether they're pastors, preachers, worship leaders, missionaries, to deliver success or what they think other people think success is being. I found this difficult in Cambodia, and that it actually took us a long time to build relationships. It took us a long time to get settled into the places where we were working. And I had this restlessness. I'm like, oh, what am I going to write back to our supporters this month? You know, I haven't achieved anything. You know, my winning souls quota was a little low for the month. And I really, there's this drive, this feeling, this need to actually justify yourself in a way, to actually spectacularize what you are doing. I think it's a really difficult thing and something that I really struggled with while I was in Cambodia as well. So I think what I had to learn was, instead of going looking around seeing where can I have something visible impact, which group of people can I work with that will have a real visible change, and I can say, look what I've done. These people have grown in their faith and they've become Christians and they've changed their lives. And it's, instead of doing that, I actually had to focus on being faithful in the small things, not focusing on those great things that I wanted to achieve and wanted to see in Cambodia. I had to focus on being faithful in the small things, faithful to the people that God had brought into my life, who maybe I thought weren't as significant, or they'd be a little slow in learning or whatever, and I was always looking for the next big thing. I had to learn to be faithful to the people that were there and the opportunities, being faithful to what I had in my hand right now, not just looking at grasping at something bigger. It was really, I guess, only after deciding to focus on being faithful that maybe afterwards I could look back and say maybe there was some success there. But my focus on success, on being a successful missionary, was not getting me anywhere. It's not until I stopped and realized I needed to be faithful. And it's a bit of an upside-down way of looking at things, isn't it? I feel that our society, our culture, very much emphasizes success. And we very much build that as, you know, that's what everyone wants in life. You know, a successful life, a successful job, a successful marriage. And it's kind of inbuilt into our way of thinking without realizing it. But I think the way of the kingdom, the culture of God's kingdom, is actually upside down. So often, God's way, God's culture, is topsy-turvy to what we think and to what the society around us thinks. He who wants to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life for me will find it. That's upside down, isn't it? It's actually more blessed to give than to receive. You'll get more blessings yourself if you give all your blessings away. It's an upside-down way of thinking, isn't it? Remember the parable of the lost sheep? Jesus abandoning all the other sheep to go and chase after the one sheep. Well, that's not very thoughtful. That's not very practical. It's certainly not very successful. It's not a strategy for success. It's a strategy for abandonment. There's something about the way of Jesus that is upside down. It just doesn't quite make sense. But actually, it's the way that we've been called to. It's the way that we've been called to. Even Jesus himself, by earthly standards, did not have a very successful ministry, let's face it. He was born into a family that was poor. He just about scraped by the skin of his teeth. He was almost murdered as a baby. He grew up in an area of the country where people were generally teased and kind of looked down upon. You know, I don't want to make equivalents, but, you know, maybe he would have grown up in the Liverpool of this area. Is that bad? I love Liverpool, by the way. Can I just say quickly to capture that? But maybe their reputation wasn't so good for Galilee. As he grew up, he made just as many enemies as he did friends. He was abandoned by his friends. Instead of riding in on a chariot, which is what kings did, he rode in on a donkey. And then he made even more enemies. And then he was abused, and then he was tried, and then he was killed on a cross. So even without the resurrection, which again didn't happen in front of a stadium of 100,000 people, it wasn't a very successful mission by earthly standards, was it? Jesus' mission was not successful in the way that we would view what success is. There was an upside-down way of doing things, an upside-down way of thinking that was going on there. I guess I want to give a few examples of maybe what that looks like, heading down the road of success or heading down the road of faithfulness. And I brought in a prop to try and illustrate this. Laura can go rescue my prop. In Cambodia, I always tried to use props when I was speaking, because very often, almost always, I was using a translator. So if you want to try and keep people's attention for half the time when they can't understand a word you're saying, try and jump around and try and wave flags and balls, you know, use anything to try and get their attention and kind of illustrate the point that you're making. So I brought a small trampoline, bizarrely. This could go terribly wrong and I could end up in hospital. I hope not. I think success, if we're motivated by success, we tend to be very focused on visible achievements and big results, don't we? Because actually, success is really only success if other people can see that it's successful, wouldn't you say? So this is looking really wobbly. So very, very often, and this is my struggle, very often I feel if you go down the road of success, it's like you're always grabbing for the next thing. You're always like trying to reach higher and higher and grab for more and more because you want to be successful and you want to climb the ladder and you want to get higher and do better. And actually, it can be very deadly. It can be very tiring. Actually, faithfulness helps us to see what's going on the ground, what's going on right now. Not on the trampoline, where you're always looking to the next thing. What's next? What's my next achievement? What's my next goal? Where am I moving to next? Again, it's something I've really struggled with. I've lived in quite a few countries, and my parents are missionaries, and I've always kind of had this feeling of, okay, what's next on the horizon? Okay, where am I moving to next? What's the next project? What's the next action? What's the next country, destination? But actually, faithfulness says, what is right here, right now, on the ground? What is God giving you in your hand? Who are the people that God has placed in your life? What are those little things that are happening right in the present that he wants you to be faithful in? And I'm all for the future, and I'm all for us thinking big. But actually, God also says, be faithful in the small things. Mother Teresa was quoted famously as saying, we can do no great things, only small things with great love. Now, I don't know if I agree with her. I think we can do great things, but I think in aiming and striving for those great things all the time, we actually often miss the small things that we need to do with great love. Maybe the small people or the small opportunities that we need to be faithful in with great love. I want to ask my wife to come up and share a little bit.
Can everyone hear me? All right. Okay, great. During the time that we were in Cambodia, my main job was to go and work with a group called the Artisans Association of Cambodia. And I soon realized after a couple of months that they viewed me very differently to the way I viewed myself coming into Cambodia. They saw me as a foreigner who had all these amazing skills, had all these amazing experiences, and they put me on a pedestal of how they expected me to perform in Cambodia and in their organization. And I was in charge of preparing training in design to deliver to other artisan groups. I was in charge of supporting over 30 handicraft groups in design and being able to encourage them with product development and developing their products to sell. I was in charge of connecting them with international buyers who would come to Cambodia to buy the products. And over a while, I realized that this was becoming very frustrating for me. And I wondered why this was becoming frustrating. And I realized that I was doing a lot of doing and I was expected to achieve lots. I had goals I had to meet. We had reports to write. And I just became very frustrated. And I went back to why God had called me into the things that we were doing in Cambodia and realized actually my desire was to encourage people in their creative abilities and spend time with people. So I went on a journey of being able to find groups that I could work with where I would spend time with people and be. And God really spoke to me through working with a group called Daughters, which works with girls who have been in prostitution and they want an alternative work. So we were being with them and encouraging them in new ways of working. And I just realized that I wasn't in Cambodia to do and to achieve things and to meet the goals that people had set before me or the Cambodians had put on me or I put on myself, that I was there to achieve and do things. But I was there to sit down and be with people and relate to people and love people like Jesus does. And so for me, it's doing versus being. For me, God has said, you need to be with people and relate to people first, and then you can do.
Cool. Thanks. I think that's one example of the calling of faithfulness. The calling of faithfulness is a calling to people. And it may seem obvious because we all believe in relationships in this church. We believe in people. But if our motivation is success, even in our Christian walk, it can creep in and we start to miss people. And we start to focus maybe a little too much on the doing and not enough on the being. Also, success tends to be quite me-orientated, doesn't it? By nature, it's competitive, isn't it? You are only successful in the sense of in relation to another person being not successful. So, again, very easily, we can get into a thinking of comparison, where we compare what we have and our success compared to other people. And again, that's just the nature of success. It is competitive, and it is a comparison. And also, inevitably, by doing that, we're trying to get ahead of other people. I'm using my trampoline again, just in case you noticed. We're trying to get ahead of other people. And it's not necessarily just a work thing, but actually we're trying to get ahead of people on a spiritual ladder or the church ladder or whatever the ladder is or the ladder of your friendships. And comparisons can creep into your families. It's like, oh, my baby spoke at 1, or my baby spoke at 6 months, you know, or whatever it is. It's so easy to fall into this idea of, I need to be a successful mother, parent, worker, Christian volunteer, whatever it is. And actually, we try and go upwards and upwards and upwards. But faithfulness, I believe, is different. Faithfulness actually often goes downwards. When Jesus came to the earth, he was faithful in his mission, and his mission went down, right to the people who are the poorest, the people who are the most outcast, the people who are the most needy. And I think if we are motivated by faithfulness to God, I think we cannot help but be compelled to go down to the people who are needy, who are outcast, who are broken, people who are, in a sense, not up there where we might be striving for, but they are, in life terms, down here. When Jesus said, whatever you did for the least of these, you did for me, and whatever you didn't do for the least of these, you didn't do for me, what he's really saying is, when you were faithful to the least of these, you were faithful to me. Get it? And when you weren't faithful to the least of these, when you ignored them and weren't faithful to them, you weren't faithful to me. And that's really challenging for all of us, and totally me included. Success, also, I kind of inevitably, it doesn't always have to be like this, but there is a dimension of success that's very much focused on gathering earthly riches. And those riches could be financial, in terms of getting more money, but actually, put it into Christian ministry terms, a lot of times the success is, look at my church, look how many people come to my church, or whatever it is. Again, success leads us to try and get earthly riches, whether it's reputation, whether it's financial gain, whether it's earning the respect of other people. Not all bad, but not what our focus should be. Faithfulness actually helps us to focus on heavenly riches. And by heavenly riches, I don't believe in heavenly riches as a metaphor. I believe it very literally. We will have riches in heaven. We will have good stuff in heaven. Maybe that's another kind of topic altogether. But faithfulness, being faithful to God, helps us have a perspective that sees maybe what I'm doing right now isn't earning me success. It isn't earning me reputation. It isn't earning me applause, or it isn't earning me riches here on earth. But I know that I'm storing them up in heaven, and it's going to be even greater on that day when God says, wow, you are a faithful servant. I've trusted you with a few things on earth, because that's what the parable of the tenants is about. I've trusted you with a few things on earth. You are going to be trusted with even more things in heaven. We'll actually have responsibilities in heaven as well as riches in heaven. And sure, they may come on earth. We may be faithful with some small things on earth, and that same equation works itself out here on earth. But actually, where the real meaning is in that passage is it's when the Lord returns and actually gives you the riches and the responsibilities in heaven. Faithfulness helps us keep that focus, that it's not all about what we get here on earth. It's not all about getting as much whatever we can before we die, before we go. James 4, verse 3 puts this interestingly in the light of motives. James writes, when you ask, you do not receive, because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. And again, our motives are a really difficult one when it comes to money, isn't it? When we're looking to get more money, which isn't a bad thing, we do have to really check our motives, you know. And the Bible says, actually, if you're asking from God with the wrong motives, you won't get it. And my parents, I think, used to quote this to me when I was praying fervently for the brand new bike for Christmas. And they were going, well, you're praying with the wrong motives, son, you know, because you only want it for yourself. And I was like, yes, Dad, but I'm 5. So anyway, so maybe we'll let 5-year-olds off a bit. But it's an interesting thought. It's challenging. Think about our motives in terms of wealth and in terms of money. Here's where I think kind of getting to the nub of where I struggle with going down the road of success compared to faithfulness. I think success so often is a burden. It's a chore, isn't it? I don't know about you, but particularly when I was in Cambodia, I felt this. And also, I feel this at other times in my life. The expectation that other people have on me, or the expectation I place on myself to be successful, actually becomes a burden, because it becomes about comparison, inevitably. And there's always going to be people ahead of you. You know, there's always going to be people who are more successful at you, doing whatever it is better, whether it's praying in tongues or healing or earning money or having reputation or whatever it is. There's always going to be people who are doing it better at a higher level. And if you're driven by that and motivated by that too much, it becomes a burden, doesn't it? It just becomes like a weight on your shoulders. I believe faithfulness actually takes away that burden. Faithfulness frees us up, because faithfulness is not a comparison, okay? Faithfulness is not Tina I've been more faithful than you have been because I've done X and you've only done Y. Faithfulness is actually relative to each of us. Okay, faithfulness doesn't compare by some sort of societal standards about who's being successful and who's being not. There's no God standard about who's being faithful and who's not, because ultimately there's one standard, Jesus. We've all fallen short. We need to be forgiven and get over that. And then we need to see, what has God given us right now, right here? What is he saying in his word? What has he given us and trusted us in his hands that we need to be faithful for? Whether it's our neighbors, whether it's our family, it's friends, it's money, whatever it is. Faithfulness frees us up, because we don't have to compare. We don't have to play that game anymore with anyone else. It's just about us and God. And we will only be judged by God on our faithfulness. No one else can judge us on our faithfulness. It's a God. I mean, and that should be more worrying than us judging each other, by the way, that God will judge us. But actually, it also frees us up, because it's not about a game. It's just about being faithful to God. I want to dispel a bit of a myth, because I would guess that some of you might be thinking something along the lines of this. Success is for men. Faithfulness is for women. Come on, I know you're thinking it, some of you. And it's true, and I think sometimes we've had this kind of, I don't know, we've given off this kind of image of, well, success is kind of, it's quite a masculine kind of trait, you know, you're striving, it's competitive, and faithfulness is just like, oh, I'm just being a faithful old lady praying for one person, oh, yeah, yeah. So I want to sort of dispel that. It's not true. Success isn't for men, and faithfulness isn't for women. It's not, faithfulness is not a wimpy thing, in a sense. Faithfulness is not effeminate. How about that? I'm speaking to the men now more than the women, perhaps. Faithfulness is actually the tough root. Faithfulness is the tough root. In Hebrews, it says that the faithful one is the one who perseveres to the end against the odds. Actually, success is the easy route, because success can come very quickly, and you can lose it very quickly, and then you can get it very quickly, and you lose it very quickly. Faithfulness is the long, hard fight. Faithfulness is what Moses was rewarded or hailed as being faithful. And he was the author of the greatest rescue mission of all time. This is Moses. Faithfulness is actually a fight. Faithfulness is a fight against principalities and powers. Faithfulness is, you know, is a competition for winning minds and winning hearts and winning souls. You know, faithfulness is what calls people out to the other ends of the world to go and serve God in dangerous places. Faithfulness is not wimpy. Faithfulness is not wimpy. Faithfulness is actually a greater calling than success. And I think there's a few people here that I know have, or I believe have done things that have maybe proven successful, or maybe they will prove successful in the future, but they've done it, you guys have done it, not because you wanted to be successful, you wanted it to have results and to be seen as successful. You've done it out of faithfulness to God. I know that Andy Swift, he's written his book, not because he wants to be successful, but because he wants to be faithful to what God has told him to do. Lucy, I know that you've been doing Recharge and investing so much energy into Recharge, not because you want it to be success and have everyone know about it, because you're being faithful to what God has put on you and what God has given you. Julian and Annie Bullen are going to be going to Mozambique. They're dropping careers, they're dropping families, they're dropping all those things that are not, would not be seen as successful, and they're being true to God's calling. They're being faithful, and it's taking them to the other side of the world. I think that if we start from a place of faithfulness, often success will come. But if we start from a place of success, we're heading down the wrong road. Does that kind of make sense? I guess it's kind of my problem with a prosperity gospel a bit. I have nothing against, in fact, I love God to bless me, and I believe God wants to bless us all. My problem is that shouldn't be our motivation. It shouldn't be our focus. Our focus should be, seek first the kingdom of God, and then all these amazing things will be added unto you afterwards. But actually, your first motivation, your first aim, your first thought should be, how am I glorifying God? How am I being faithful to God? And then look, I'm being blessed. I'm being blessed behind. It comes up behind. So, yes, even in talking this morning, I've challenged myself, which is a good thing, I guess. And I wanted to leave you guys with a couple of questions, I guess, to reflect on. I don't know, we could do that to the lovely strumming of Rob, or we could just do it as we go home or whatever it is. I want you to reflect right now on what your motives are. What are your motives right now in your family? What are your motives for your actions and behavior in your family? What are your motives in your relationships with others? What's motivating you and driving you in your career, in your work, or your volunteering? What are your motivations in church as you lead or as you serve? And I think pure motives are really hard to come by. And I think pure motives probably won't happen until heaven, truly pure motives. But I think we know when one thing is leading and the other thing's second place. And maybe for us, for some of us, there's areas of our lives where those motives need realigning. Just need a bit of realigning the motives. And the other question I want to ask is, where is God calling you to be faithful right now? What is something that you know is in your hand, is in your area of influence, is in your life right now, today, where God is saying, don't miss this. It may seem small, it may seem insignificant, it may seem like hard work, or not a very easy route to success, but what is God calling you to be faithful in right now? And it's very often, I would say, yeah, it's very often is either a person or it's related to a person and to other people, because that's what God's about. You know, God's about bringing his kingdom and his love to other people. So where are the people and the opportunities that you have right now, today, this week, where God is saying, be faithful, push through, be faithful, push through in this? That's really it.